Hello, and welcome to Over Under Movies Podcast, where we pick one overrated movie and one underrated movie and discuss them. And in this episode, things are going to get a little bit hot and steamy. Mm. We're going to be talking about two kind of erotic thrillers.
Oh, yeah.
That were, you know, that genre was pretty big in the 90s. So, you know, we're going to go into that. And the both films... this episode were picked by Ryan, and we're going to start off with Basic Instinct, which made quite a big splash in 1992 when it came out and basically created the resurgence, the big erotic like thriller movement in Hollywood. So,
but before we do, we got to introduce ourselves.
Oh yeah, that's true. Let's just do that. I am Octavia Kozak, film critic for DVD Talk, The Playlist, Oregon Herald, and BayAspire.com.
I'm Eric McClanahan, writer, podcaster for The Playlist. I have another podcast called Adjust Your Tracking, and I'm film editor for Oregon Arts Watch.
And I'm Ryan Oliver, host of the Gotcha Movies podcast and associate editor at GotchaMovies.com.
So, Ryan, why'd you pick Basic Instinct as your overrated?
Mostly because this movie made a lot of money when it came out.
Yeah.
I was doing my research.
Kind of amazing how much
amazing. Money it made. $117.7 million domestic, $353 million worldwide.
Huge.
Huge, huge hit. Not the biggest critical hit, 54% Rotten Tomato score, 41% Metacritic score. But the reason is because this movie made a lot of money, and it is by a filmmaker who, for all intents and purposes, I revere. I think we all do, Paul Verhoeven.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yes, definitely. He's done... I need to catch up more with his, you know, more native films.
Yeah,
but
his Dutch films.
But he did six films within the studio systems, which can be branched out into pairs into three different categories. He's done two arguably really good movies. Well, not arguably, are Total Recall and RoboCop.
Mm-hmm. Some people would argue the other end, but they would be wrong.
I would argue RoboCop is a masterpiece, actually.
It's a satirical masterpiece.
It's very satirical. Yeah. And then, which is, you know, all of his
Total
movies.
Total Recall is great.
And Total Recall is a great movie, too. He's done two really, really terrible movies in Showgirls and Hollow Man.
Hollow Man is the nadir, man. That's the worst.
Like, Showgirls, there's that camp value.
There's some fun to be
had. Like, because I had so much fun figuring out, like, how far is he going to take this?
And what is it for Helvin? Pretty far.
I just remember that line.
Showgirls has character, and Hello Man is just...
It's a bland and kind of gross at times. Very gross at times.
Even for Verhoeven, it's a...
It goes too far.
It's a bit too far.
But he's done two films that I think are just, like, middling, that show both the best side and the worst side of him, being both Starship Troopers and, I'd say, Basic Instinct.
Interesting, okay.
I think the first 45 minutes, rewatching Basic Instinct... it's very satirical and casually misanthropic in that Verhoeven way. There's a lot of subversion to the sort of, like, crime detective movie in the way that they're talking, in the way that they're, like, joking around the crime scene, and the way that they, like, the way he dissects these certain archetypes. Like, I love the Michael Douglas's partner in this movie.
Gus.
Yeah, who's just great. So blatantly, like, you know...
I'm a Southerner,
and he's like, what is the line I ever wrote? Her pussy's cluttering your brain. Like, he says lines like the very stereotypical lines.
You got your head so far up your ass, you can smell it or something.
Exactly. It's so, there are just so many, like, great little, like, touches like that in this movie, but at the same time, it's like, when it goes, not, I wouldn't say off the rails, but it kind of devolves into the sort of, like, template for the thriller that it's supposed to be sending up.
Yeah.
At the time that Michael Douglas's character takes a leave and starts seeing Sharon Stone more frequently in the movie, it starts to just settle into a generic thriller.
It turns
into
this, like, weird generic love story almost, which completely goes opposite of what the film was trying to basically create. And the fucking thing is in the title. It's like Basic Instinct. It's all about, like, just your basic urges, just sex without love. And, you know, our underrated film deals with that a whole hell of a lot better.
Yes, in a very mature way. This is a very, I'd say, it's immature movie. It's a very juvenile movie.
You could accuse Verhoeven, all his films, though, of having juvenile elements.
Oh,
it's kind of what makes some of his best work so fun. Like, Total Recall has just, like, juvenile amounts of violence, right? And, like, yet there's enjoyment to be had.
Well, he's a shit kicker kid version of Cronenberg.
Yeah, right. But Cronenberg always, and we'll get to this, of course, with our underrated pick. Like, Cronenberg is known as a cerebral filmmaker. Verhoeven is pretty damn smart, but he also likes making, like, good bad movies.
He loves the camp value in his movies. He loves ultra violence. He will never make it. It's going to be too intelligent. He's too much into psychology and science to be
to really let go of that.
Yeah, to be silly, which sometimes is to his own detriment. Sure. Mostly not, but for Verhoeven, he he likes to have fun with the material,
and that's why you think a movie called Basic Instinct would be like perfect for him. You know?
Exactly.
Like, you think the material is great, and I honestly, I think. Do you guys remember who the writer at the time, Joe Esterhaus, was like the big... Him and Shane Black were like known as the big high-paid screenwriters at
that
time.
And he was making a lot of money on some pretty, like, pretty trashy, like, typical... And that's what... Why Basic Instinct becomes so disappointing after a point. Because, again, that first 45 minutes feels...
It's doing something.
Like, yeah, it's doing something, and it feels like it's...
I think that's
like
mostly Verhoeven.
That's what I mean. It's like, I feel like Esterhaus wrote this the way that he would have wrote... he wrote Flashdance, right? Yeah. Am I not mistaken? Yeah. Like, something like that.
He co-wrote Flashdance.
He co-wrote it. Yeah. Okay, so something like that. But, like, Verhoeven, like, just makes fun constantly of the elements of a movie like that. And then, again, it just settles into
it's,
the
it's
tropes
of that. It's almost like he's trolling Joe Esterhaus's shitty screenplay, like the way that he executes the material.
He has no problem, I think, making fun of his own movie, which is actually a quality I like about Paul Verhoeven. He's got sort of an anarchist, like, I don't give a shit sort of vibe to it. It goes with, like, the way he shows gratuitous violence. So when the credits for Basic Instinct started, you know, I'm watching this. I haven't watched this movie for, like, 15 years, you know? But to me, as a young boy, when it came out and I got access to, like, Showtime, this was, like, the movie I had to...
absolutely.
Like, right?
You knew the ice pick, you knew everything about it. Beaver shot. You're like, I gotta see this.
The beaver shot. Yes. All these things were like pop culture. This movie was kind of a pop culture
phenomenon. It's been spoofed on several occasions.
Yeah.
I mean, there was that
There were like three or four entire movies. That
Fatal Instinct made fun of this movie like in its entirety.
And pretty much all the Zucker Abrams movies that came out made fun of it. And
yeah,
like,
Hot Shots Part 2 has that scene where... Charlie Sheen's having sex with the girl from the mole, and she ties him up. And you think she's pulling out the ice pick, but it's a screwdriver to fix the squeaky bed.
So it reached a level of pop cultural like
people
saturation.
Knew these moments of this movie.
Even if they hadn't seen it, people knew the infamous stuff, right? And I think the main reason for that is Verhoeven, like because this script is like it's pretty hacky script. Yet
it's
you can
hacky.
See you can see how someone like Joe Esterhaus. Perfectly played within the who's the guy? He's a character in Adaptation, but he was a real script doctor guy. Do you know the character?
Robert McKee.
He kind of fits right into that Robert McKee mold, and which was a big deal at the 80s and the 90s.
Or
when
the fucking Save the Cat guy, where you're just given like here's the mold that you need to fit. Here are the strict points that you need
to hit. A template for how
to
write successful screenplays. Yeah. And Esterhaus kind of like mastered
that. It's every single one of those. Yeah.
And the only reason this movie sings or comes to life when it does is Verhoeven and I think the casting, and we'll have to talk about Sharon Stone, but like this is a great Michael Douglas role. I don't know if it's a great performance, but it's a really good role for him.
It's a very archetypal Michael Douglas role. He's the
sleaze,
brooding.
But he's a sleazebag.
He's sleaze, but he's brooding too. And he's got baggage. He's the tough detective.
Well, he's a sleazebag, not in the like, okay, we're just going to show you this like despicable person, like bad lieutenant kind of way.
Right.
But in more in the like, you know, trashy, bossed up novel detective, which has, you know, has some like, shady thing in the past,
right?
But, you know, you don't really know if he's innocent or not,
right?
And,
right.
You know, but it like tries to correct things. So there's a little bit of that, like, okay, we need to throw something to the reader or the audience to like identify with this character a little bit more. So
right.
It follows in that very safe kind of noir pattern where it's just like, we don't want to make this guy too much of a It's not like Double Indemnity where it's just like both of the protagonists are just like. Scumbags,
right?
Murderous assholes.
No, this is definitely the very like any subtleties that Double Indemnity has. This movie just throws them away.
Yeah,
like
no,
it takes those two templates and just like here's what was really on their mind the whole time. If Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck, like what they were really thinking.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, and no, go ahead.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about Joe Esterhaus, which you know, and the script, and the script itself is like flat out. You know, you could take it word by word and turn it into this, like, hacky straight-to-video, like one of those, like, Poison Ivy 4
basically
or Night Eyes or something. They had a lot of those movies before Basic Instinct, but they were mostly, like, straight-to-video. It had, like, softcore porn scenes and stuff like that.
Yep.
And you wouldn't be able to, like, if you gave it to that kind of a production, like a $1 million, $500,000 production, you would be able to pull it off in this like really cheapo way, and it would still be the same goddamn script, I think. Like, the script itself, there's nothing special in the script. It's just that Verhoeven's kind of tongue-in-cheek attitude of taking this thing and making, like, trash. Like his point wasn't to, you know, like, Alfred Hitchcock's point with Psycho was like, what if someone really good, like, elevated this material.
Exactly.
His point is not to elevate it. It's to relish in it, but to make it look as spiffy and expensive as possible. Yeah. And that's what makes it, like, so much fun to watch, because you're watching, like, these A-class movie stars just, like, dealing with this, like, really pulpy, trashy, like,
dialogue. Like the opening, not the opening scene, but, like, the scene after the fact, where they're talking, and he's like, oh, there's
he got off before he got off.
Yeah, like, it's like, there's like cum on the bed.
The, like, complete insensitivity of the characters around a murder scene or whatever. Yeah, like, which, again, Verhoeven plays
it's that casual misanthropy that he loves to revel in, exactly.
Right, and ultimately, what you're describing, Octay and Ryan, too, is like the movie is at its best when it embraces the fact that it's basically a movie version of one of the books that Sharon Stone character writes in the movie.
I'm glad you brought that
up. Like, the titles are like Love Hurts, and it's about a character being killed by, like, it's just like hilarious.
That is the only thing that I think the script has going for it that's like even remotely original, is this sort of attempt at a meta commentary of placing them within one of those trashy romantic novels.
Yeah, you're right.
In Esterhaz's mind, the books were supposed to be used as, you know, the MacGuffins for the story, not just not like an actual commentary on, like, oh, this is like one of the trashy. I think Verhoeven's the one who kind of like took that and just made it like one of the central points of the character.
Right.
That makes
sense. Well, and, you know, really, if you want to even further the argument that Verhoeven's the one that makes this work, if it does at all, is because, like, look at something that Esterhaus wrote that also starred Sharon Stone that came out like a year later, Sliver.
Yeah.
I don't even remember who directed Sliver.
Philip Noyce.
And he's not a bad filmmaker.
Yeah, that's why I say unfortunately. He's some really good movies.
The movie is just, you can see how it's lacking in the, like, sort of vigor. Like, Paul Verhoeven, you guys basically got at it, but he's the exploitation director that's gotten the biggest budgets to make pulp exploitation. Like, if Sam Fuller could have had the budgets that Paul Verhoeven did in his time, like, kind of his movies would have looked a lot, I would think, like this. You know, like Shock Corridor, some of that stuff, you know?
I could see that.
You can see Verhoeven's just more of a madman, I think, you know? So he's got that element, too. And you can't, like...
But at the same time, Sam Fuller would have never, like, settled for Esterhaus's shitty script.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. And maybe that's an argument for another day.
But visually, I totally agree with what
you said. And material-wise.
Yeah, material-wise. You know? Exactly, yeah.
So, Ryan, you've already gotten at it, too. Like, this movie was a pop culture like thing. It was a phenomenon. Made a ton of money. It obviously wasn't critically loved, but there are like reviews, and like I think Owen Gleiberman's review in the Entertainment Weekly is pretty like glowing.
It's pretty,
and a lot of people, you know, Sharon Stone became a star because of this. You can see why, but then also like maybe it's worth getting into her performance because she was so central, I think, to the success also of this movie beyond Verhoeven. Like, she's what people
it was
knew
her
about.
Breakout performance, which is, it's weird going back and thinking, and it's kind of not intentionally. I was just like cleaning and watching Casino the other day, which was a great Sharon Stone performance. But I had to like sit there and think, and I was like, you know, outside of Casino and Basic Instinct, I haven't really seen a lot of movies that she's been in.
So Total Recall. Like,
I mean, yeah, Total Recall, but that was pre this. But she is like, she's pretty crucial to like that movie. Role. My favorite one-liner revolves around her death.
Exactly,
consider dad a divorce.
That's great.
But I think she. She, I mean, obviously, she's very beautiful. There's no doubt about that.
There's no doubt about it.
And she is talented. And the fact that, you know, she got away with saying the lines that she does in this movie, and because it's so risque and for the time, just like, oh, like it shocked people.
She gets the hackiest lines.
She does get really hacky lines, but she sells them. Yeah, that's the thing. She's exactly. Michael Douglas just kind of does his Michael Douglas thing, and it works.
Yeah.
But she sells those lines of dialogue, and like, I understand people were like, they had to see this movie. I checked out the opening because this was back when a movie could open small and just have legs for fucking ever. The opening was only $15 million. Mm-hmm. So against 117 million, people just kept talking and talking and had to go see this movie.
And I guess... Go ahead.
Oh, so even like a movie that does a little bit of the subject matter better that we had recently that had a lot of legs is Gone Girl.
Right.
And
right.
very, like, takes a trashy, really trashy, silly concept, yeah. but actually turns it into, like, an artful... Which
has a much more violent, like, sex murder
scene. Man, I don't know. I don't know. That opening scene... The opening one is, like, so, up. I wanted to get at when I mentioned the credits is I forgot... I'm, like, watching the opening credits. I'm kind of listening to this very familiar score, which I also want to talk about Jerry Goldsmith's score. So remind me. But... I'm like, they have a direct one credit for, in the opening credits, for the makeup effects. It's like, makeup effects? Like, this is how hazy in my memory
Rob
the movie
Bocaine
was.
Too, so
yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's, why did this movie, this ain't a slasher movie. I remember people die in it, you know? And then that opening scene happens, and it's like, oh, man, it's like, that's Verhoeven, you know? Like, and obviously the makeup work done there, but like, he will go that full, like, he will show you the ice pick going through a guy's head, you know, like, in a scene. And that's, again, the stuff that makes this movie sing is like, this was in multiplexes. This is what your mom and dad went to go see to talk about.
I think that's part of the reason why it was such a big success, because it was like this...
It relishes
that... It was a Hollywood movie that dealt with these, you know, kind of issues and, you know... I mean, murder and sex and the cohabitation of both and, like, how graphic it becomes and how over the top it gets as far as, like, sex and violence is concerned. And, you know, but at the same time, it's, like, it perfectly caters. It doesn't go, like, too over the top, too NC-17, too all the way with it.
Right.
And it keeps it to a certain level where it's just, like, the... It kind of, I don't want to say conservative, but, you know, I would, you know, people who don't usually watch stuff like that, people who are not usually, into, like, I remember when it came out, I was in junior high, and, you know, that was, like, weirdly enough, that was, like, the only thing 14-year-old teenager boys and their mothers had in common.
They both wanted to see Basic Instinct.
Because it's like, it really speaks about 14-year-old boys, like me and my friends, it's like the obvious, like we want to just watch the sex scenes. And
you want to see this,
you want to see Sharon Stone's breasts and you know, the whole thing. And Ben for our mothers, I feel like, I remember my mother and her friends constantly talking about it and things like, because it's just like, it's one of those things that just like sounds risque and sounds, but at the same time, because it comes with like a Michael Douglas starring movie, a big budget, you know, Hollywood, like it gives it a little bit more of that legitimacy that truly worked and made it. But at the same time, if you look at, you know, Paul Verhoeven's like original like Dutch films, like, you know, you watch something like Turkish Delight, which is just like incredibly graphic.
Yeah,
like it's insanely like. They talk about like eating each other's shit and all that stuff. Like it goes way overboard.
Right.
And this is a movie from like the mid-70s.
Right.
Rutger Hauer.
He did that before stuff. He came to Hollywood.
Yeah. It's like all the stuff he did before coming to Hollywood is a lot more like perverted and kinky and weird.
Which is saying
and
something.
Just completely,
I mean,
over the top. So this is like.
But for American Hollywood, audiences, it, like this was.
For Hollywood.
He found the Hollywood, perfect balance between like. Just enough graphic sex, and apparently, like, and I feel like he did this in a very like aware fashion, because, you know, apparently he choreographed the hell out of those sex scenes to make sure that like he could get in every single little bit that he could through the MPAA and still get an R rating.
Yeah.
So he pushed the envelope as much as he could. So in that case, I think like you can put a lot of that credit on Verhoeven.
Mm.
As far as like getting that mood and that tone right and the violence and the sex that he, I mean, but at the same time, it's like you're talking about a film that's where the, I think the overrated part comes in, is is not really that much envelope pushing or really delves into any kind of mature adult issues of sexuality. I mean, the big shocking thing
or gender
about,
roles or anything like that, like the whole, I mean, again, this goes with his just worldview of like just being almost nihilistic to a point. It's like men are pigs and women are crazy. That's essentially what you're supposed to take away from this movie. Whereas our underrated film delves into a more like gray area in terms of sex and violence and very subtle. Anyway.
Yeah, and it's the like the most shocking thing about Sharon Stone's character in a way is that she's a bisexual. And with your kind of like with my back then when I was like 14 when I first
that was mind blowing.
Like, oh, she sleeps with like hot women, dude.
Yeah,
and it's like the typical like Hollywoodized lesbian relationship where it's just like both women are like insanely hot.
They're hot to heterosexual
guys. Yeah, exactly. Like they have that kind of look, which you know usually doesn't happen in real life. But like looking at it from the perspective with the maturity that I have now, it's just like looks so timid and dated. But at the same time, I could see why it appealed to people who didn't watch a lot of porn, maybe, who didn't like really get, and like you're talking about like middle American like housewives who are just like, ooh, this like it's like sensationalist thing.
It's a very much of its time movie. Like going back and watching it, it reeks of early 90s.
Yeah. And I think that happens with most of Verhoeven's films, and it just depends on whether their placement in the era that they came out in still has like relevance.
That's why RoboCop
is a masterpiece. Exactly. And it's still relevant to today, why that movie still works.
It's a perfect 80s movie.
It's why Showgirls and like, Showgirls doesn't work, I would say. Like, doesn't
Showgirls works as a bad movie. I would put in Showgirls to watch at late night.
Yeah.
And laugh your ass off. Before I watch Basic Instinct any day.
True. Anytime they do like those VH1, like I Love the 90s, like things that are on, they always talk about Showgirls at one point. They always show the scene when Kyle MacLachlan, Elizabeth Berkley, and she's just like flailing.
There was sort of a test run for that sort of thing in Basic Instinct. Yeah. I mean, it's not water, but
on the bed, but, like.
Yeah,
the way they're doing it, apparently Kyle MacLachlan's dick is about 65 inches long, I would say.
Yeah. It's
pretty
there's
funny. No way you could get the kind of penetration of, like bouncing up like 3 feet in the air every single time. And
Starship Troopers is dated in the way of it, in terms of the special effects, I would say. It's kind of like the Escape from LA, like water surfing scene. Anytime I watch some of the special effects, I was like, ooh, that's
some look good still in that movie. I mean, it's not worth like devolving into a discussion.
No, it isn't. But the jokey like propagandiness of that movie is what makes it what works about that movie,
totally.
I would say.
Again, definitely. It's a certain approach. Certain directorial approach like elevates this like B movie material, and he does that over and over. And I think he really slipped with Hollow Man, and that's why he kind of like left it behind for a while. And now he's doing like he's going back to doing his like Dutch movies. I guess he has a movie coming out this year, after Black Book. So,
he wrote a book about Jesus.
Really?
Yeah, like came out a couple years ago, man.
Interesting.
Yeah. Wow. He's apparently a huge Jesus scholar, like as a person. He like is a he's been wanting to make a movie version out of it, I've heard too.
I want to see what his version is.
Unless I'm totally mistaken, I'm pretty sure the book was published, so like it's his, like he's a scholar, like he's all about researching like if that was a person, like that's what he's into.
That's fascinating.
I'd be first in line for his version of like kind of a Last Temptation of Christ story.
Absolutely. But he's undeniably a great director, and Basic Instinct, like we talked off mic, it was fun to go back and watch this movie, but it's very dated and just very trashy in that Verhoeven way, and just overall, like I see where it made the money that it did, but like I don't it's not really even in the cultural conversation, I would
there's
say.
There's a reason it hasn't disappeared.
Exactly.
Showgirls is more in the cultural conversation than Basic Instinct is.
Because
when Showgirls
goofy,
first came
fun,
out, it tanked. But now it's like all these, like for example, in San Francisco, the Castro Theater, one of the biggest theaters in San Francisco, historic. They do, I think once a month, they do midnight screenings of Showgirls. And I used to work with this woman who was a faux drag queen. So she's a woman, but she's also a drag queen.
Mm-hmm.
And her and her like other like professional drag queens, like they just get together and they dress up as the characters. And they get hired for the screening. They're not like there to like cosplay. And they go and like they give like lap dances to like the audience and stuff. Like, so it's just like this big giant blast.
Right.
And I'm so sad that before moving out of San Francisco that I like missed it. But that's what happened with Showgirls. Showgirls got elevated into this, like, you know, kind of pop culture, like, the same kind of midnight movie, so bad it's good kind of status. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of fun to be had from Showgirls, from that perspective.
Definitely.
But the difference between Showgirls and something like The Room is that I think Paul Verhoeven, like, clearly wanted to make the kind of trashiest, shittiest B movie possible.
Yeah, he knows his
material. The budget that he was given.
Because that came right after Basic Instinct. Yeah. And I think Joe Esterhaus, he wrote the script for Showgirls as well. So he's like, well, I already pushed it. How much further can I go
and
with this?
I think in the end, that's why Showgirls is the more memorable movie.
And I admire how far he would be.
Yeah. Exactly. Every time I was like watching this, like when Elizabeth Berkley goes back to the strip club and the guy who runs it's like, I didn't recognize you without cum on you. And it's like, how much further is this going to go? And then it just keeps going. I think he intentionally
cast those people, too. I think the bad acting in that movie is completely intentional.
You could argue that about Starship Troopers.
Yeah, I was about to say, he wanted to cast people who were closer to the age of those people.
Right.
They're intentionally wooden.
A lot of that subversive sort of side of him is what's missing in Basic Instinct the most. I think you can kind of argue that it's like pretty conservative for him, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because he's pushed it further after, and even before, like, RoboCop has more, like, risque stuff, with violence.
Super,
you know?
Violent.
It's conservative for him. It's risque for conservatives.
Exactly.
So it's like it finds its perfect sweet spot.
Hence why Basic Instinct was the biggest hit he ever made, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes sense. And it's interesting to see how it's decreased in the cultural relevancy, Basic Instinct. Because
it was a pop culture. It wasn't necessarily a film culture.
Exactly. So, it was the sort of like your 15 minutes of fame thing. It
exactly. The world that we occupy, it's not really like relevant anymore.
Right. The thing, I don't want to totally sidetrack us, but I wanted to bring up about the score.
I was going to remind you to bring it up.
It's something that actually really bothers me about this movie. Mm-hmm. Okay, so did this score by Jerry Goldsmith remind you of a movie that we all keep near and dear to our hearts? Am I crazy, or is the score the main theme, the sort of slow theme that plays over the credits? It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark, exactly, dude. It's exactly the theme of like
when they open the Ark theme. It's whenever you see the Ark, you hear it,
or anybody talks about the Ark.
Yeah.
Total Jerry Goldsmith ripped that off from
straight
up and
put it in this movie.
And it's like it's like weird because the credits are starting. I'm watching this movie last night, and it's like, oh man, that score is good. And then it took 10 more seconds. I was like, this is the Raiders of the Lost Ark score.
Yeah, for the most part. And then like almost all the death scenes are just, you know, the typical like psycho, like, hey, let's swell the music and
so
it's just like an amalgamation of these other
scores.
But
just like everything else, the lighting, the acting, like the score, it just like fits that kind of over the top, exaggerated style perfectly. Like it just like it hammers you in the head with it constantly. Like it's always just going like
reminding you of how to feel.
Like it's always like intense. Everything that happens, and that's a very Jerry Goldsmith thing. That he uses percussions a lot to like accentuate action, which works amazingly well in like something like Planet of the Apes. That score is like legendary for its use of like percussions and like unorthodox kind of methods that he used to, you know, just accentuate the action in that movie. But in this one, it's more about like, okay, we're just gonna have this like very hacky approach to everything, but we're just gonna turn everything up slightly to make it just like a little bit like uncomfortable and just insane, really. And at the same time, it's like it's almost like going back to the script a little bit. I feel like almost Paul Verhoeven must have known that, you know, it's like he knew that the story didn't make a lot of sense, because this is like one of the worst written film noir mysteries I think I've ever watched.
The mysteries are the movie gets in trouble, right?
Like, you can tell every twist coming
the telegraphing,
from a mile
right?
Away.
You watch it now and you're like, oh, it's so obvious, right? But, that's a big flaw.
The cops
in the movie.
Are the worst cops in the history,
right?
Of
and they
anything,
have to be to serve like, the plot so even, it can continue.
Like there's this one scene where they go to Sharon Stone's house. And her lesbian lover is there,
right?
And she just says, "Oh, this is where she went." And like right before they leave, she says, "Like, but you're wasting your time. Catherine didn't kill him." And then they leave. But like, wouldn't you like after someone says something like that, like, wouldn't you want to like stick around a little bit?
Maybe ask,
like, what do you mean she didn't kill him?
Right.
Well, who do you think killed him? You know, where were you? What's your name?
And the movie
just walk out.
And it also just starts to pile twist on top of twist by
without
the end, where
dealing with anything
you have to suddenly the movie becomes small and it's to its detriment, where like the world of the characters gets so small because you're like all these people are connected because they all know each other from their past, and you know what I mean. Like there's characters where it's like, what are the chances that these characters would ever run into each other again, you know? But they're all in this movie. Exactly, and I think that's a big flaw of the movie, and then the twisting on top of twist of twist, and the final shot of the movie is so stupid. Like, take out the final shot. It's like a bad horror movie that gives you the jump scare.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, what does it mean by the end? You know, you're like, that means nothing. Yeah.
It's the whole,
that's where the movie is, like, where we can really get at why we think it's underrated. Yes, they do that, or overrated.
Yes. Yeah. They do that fake out probably like about 4 or 5 times. Yeah. Like the first time Sharon Stone and Michael Douglas have sex.
Right.
She reaches back and it's like, oh, just kidding.
And the only reason, and the only reason she does that 4 or 5 times is because it's almost the audience. The character knows there's an audience.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because, like, nobody during sex would just, like, bend backwards and, like, try to reach something that doesn't exist.
It's the equivalent of Lando Calrissian in Return of the Jedi pushing his helmet down into the screen just so you're like, Lando Calrissian! I had no idea. I just watched Jedi, like, a week ago, so that's why
I can see it on your shelf.
There you go, so. Yeah. And it's, like, it's that sort of hacky, like, it's only for the audience, but
that,
it's...
That happens. But the fact that it happens, like, 3 or 4 times, just like,
well, even within the course of one scene, like that last scene you're talking about, like prior to the very last shot, it's like fake out, and it's like, oh my god!
And
like,
you know, into the pillow? Is it under the pillow? Is it over? And if he's such a great detective, wouldn't he see like a fucking ice pick laying around the bed? Like,
or the very least, he's gonna be like,
he has like 5 different hiding spots around.
He's
the bed.
Like, why do you keep leading back?
Like, he's blinded by love.
But maybe, she's stroking his ego in more ways than one. Of like, oh man, I'm really like, you know, pulling this off. So I mean, she's got to lean back for that.
I made her lean back.
I think that's where Verhoeven's like excessiveness is like, like we've complimented him quite a bit in this, and it's like fair, but he's prone to excessive stuff in his movies, and that's where it ultimately like hurts this movie as well. Mm-hmm. And I think like, it's pretty silly overall. I didn't mind watching it last night, but it is.
Shouldn't have hooked up with Esterhaz. I think that's the biggest.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out for his career.
Yeah, for his career.
But yeah.
Well, until Showgirls. So it's like one good step, one horrible step, just cancels each other out. Basically,
it's the overrated in the sense that we've talked about the town or Chicago. Basically, I would file it under one of those. Yeah. Like, I enjoyed watching this again.
Mm-hmm. Those films have better screenplays.
Well, definitely,
way better movies.
Well, they're definitely better movies.
But enjoyment.
I don't hate this movie by any stretch.
I wasn't
of the
mad
word.
At Ryan for making me watch this again. I was exactly, like, there are a lot worse overrated movies I could be watching right now.
The one thing about the script that really bugs me, and it's just like that Esterhaz's approach to like if you read any of his like kind of autobiographical books, like Hollywood Animal, you get the sense that he really has this like, he thinks he's like really smart and original and creative, and you get that kind of sense from Basic Instinct. And all the stuff that he thinks is original and creative are the stuff that bugs me the most, like the incredibly simplistic kind of approach to like showing how these two characters are alike.
Right.
Like, you know, every single, it's just like they have the exact same dialogue at when they both get
interrogated. The cigarette line.
They say
line,
the cigarette line, and he says like, oh, would I like have a fight with the guy and
you
like,
gonna arrest
him?
Me for smoking?
Yeah. That's the middle of the road sort of like bad, like making it palatable for a mainstream audience. But, unfortunately, that's those elements.
And that's the kind of stuff that makes it look like a trashy, like bust up novel or like a pulp movie.
Whereas it could have been a really great B movie if he would have been able to push it further. But then again, you see what happens with Showgirls. At least at the time when it was released, in retrospect, Showgirls has worked out pretty well for Paul Verhoeven. You know,
absolutely.
Nobody's embarrassed of that movie anymore. I don't think. You know,
it's like now people moved over.
They get it.
The graphic nature of it and just realize, this is just like a silly.
Stop taking
it
seriously.
It's almost like a kids movie. The kind of like juvenile things that like people at bachelor parties do. It has that kind of an attitude. That's why like the special edition DVD box or whatever comes with like all these bachelor party games, I guess. Like,
That's what I've heard that they do. Right. Exactly.
But it's kind of like that. It's like juvenile humor, like juvenile approach for adults. Like it really is. Like it feels like when I watch Shore Girls, I haven't seen it in like over 10 years, but it's like it really does feel like a kid's movie.
Yeah.
Like how simplistic it is.
Totally.
Definitely.
Totally. So you know, with that, should we move on over to our underrated pick? I'll lead you in there, Ryan. I'll lead you in there. Because I was gonna say, you know, we talked about Paul Verhoeven. He's a director that's sort of a similar generation to David Cronenberg.
And they get compared a lot, actually.
Yeah, they do. And I think it's
in terms of like, you know, the graphic nature and the way that they deal with psychology.
Unflinching violence. Absolutely. For sure.
Stuff like
that. So our pick is Crash. I'm sure you've read it in the title already at this point. Cronenberg's not Paul Haggis's, thank God.
No. And we should say, actually, and I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off, but it will lead you in more for your intro, is like, the easy route of this episode would have been Crash and Crash, right?
Mm-hmm. But they don't, they're not thematically similar.
The title would have been the only reason. And by now, everybody, even your grandma hates Crash.
The second that movie won Best Picture, it became overrated. Exactly. So like everybody feels that way.
There's very little value in that conversation.
We would just be like, fuck Crash, and that would be the whole episode. So you
linked Basic Instinct with Crash.
With Crash. So basically how I... You know, how I approach this is I always pick the underrated first and then pick the coinciding overrated. Okay. And so I picked Crash as underrated. It's an underrated in Cronenberg's filmography, which is saying something, because other than The Fly and maybe Eastern Promises and History of Violence, almost everything he's done could be construed as underrated in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
Relative box office to Basic Instinct made $2 million. This movie made... Well, absolutely zero money.
There's definitely one major reason.
Well, there's one major reason. This movie is also NC-17.
Yeah.
Basic Instinct is rated R. Basic Instinct is more, like, overtly graphic than Crash.
Yeah.
Like watching Crash again, like, but it's all about tone.
It's more
Crash. Yeah, Crash is more upsetting. Right. And that's what got people away from that. But I do think this is, like, the ultimate Cronenberg movie, because being both the science part of him and the psychology part of him, and the idea of this, like, body horror that he's reveled in with...
Mm-hmm. Humans and machines. Yeah,
humans and machines, together. Or even just straight psychology with something like The Brood or Dead Ringers.
He does it in a way that doesn't dip into fantasy, like a science fiction...
No. This movie is, like, very, like, very real and upsetting. And it's a more, like, complex and mature film, obviously, than Basic Instincts, that deals with the link between sex and violence. And it shows how people, like, grieve in different ways.
Right.
And Cronenberg, like, again, with his psychological aspect, he's very privy to the unconscious mind theory of Sigmund Freud, which, I mean, he made a fucking movie about Freud later on. Yep.
There you go.
But like this movie deals with the id and like the division of the id, with the eros and the thanatos, which the eros is like the life sustaining, like food, sex, whatever.
Right.
And the other side is like the aggression, the violence, and death. And so like, so you're taking the title Crash, which obviously like deals with car crashes in the way that people like relate sexually to that, but it also deals with that like sex and violence mind colliding together and where to go from there, and like how do you come back from that. And so I think this movie really, like, you don't, the movie makes it pretty clear, especially from the very last line of the movie, which you know, we could get into.
It's
but
an excellent final scene.
Yeah, it's a very like unsettling final scene.
I mean, the implications are like, well, all right, you know how this is gonna end. Yeah, exactly. Guys.
Absolutely.
It doesn't happen now, but it's going to.
It's going to. Yeah, but it's a beautiful conclusion to the
movie. It's a very mature movie, and it really is so much a Cronenberg movie.
It's so mature, so much so, right, that like it's kind of hilarious back to back with these movies, right?
Yes.
Watching them, because
the tone is all, like, can't
tone
be any different,
dialogue
different.
Right, let's just talk about dialogue in sex scenes. I kind of laughed as I was watching Crash, and it's not meant to be funny, but like there's a sex scene where Deborah Unger is her name,
yes,
excellent in this movie, and her and James Spader are having sex one of like a dozen times in the movie. And she describes all the sexual things as like very clinical: penis, semen, anus.
That's how they talk all the time.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Very Cronenbergian to sort of take the doc. Like, that's how these characters would talk, because they're like Cronenberg characters. You know, there you go, right? And I thought it was very funny, because then you think about basically every other sexy thriller type movie, Basic Instinct being one of them. It's all cock, pussy, cum.
Yeah.
All that stuff. Ass, all that stuff. And I, as funny as it was to hear people in the throes of like sexual, you know, like ecstasy say like, anus
and penis.
It's kind of funny, because you're like, who talks like that? Like, but these people talk like that, and that's why the movie has like like the best Cronenberg stuff. And I can't quite claim it as the ultimate Cronenberg movie. It's not my favorite.
Oh, it's not my favorite either. But it melds his concepts.
The
I think
things
like,
he's been after
in a
and
more
like,
and maybe ultimate in the way that it takes a more like realistic approach to one of his films, because like. Videodrome is my favorite of his. But like that movie, I mean, it's very prophetic, but at the same time,
it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist in any sort of world whatsoever. And then this movie, like this,
does
these people exist? Like, yeah, I don't know anybody personally, but like these people, but it's also
so cold and I don't want to say detached. It's not detached. It deals with these people head on. But in a way that it makes makes it feel like the people are detached, not the film.
Right.
Cronenberg is not detached from these characters, but the characters in it are detached from one another, detached from themselves in a way. And that's part of the whole point of them like trying to find that rush from all these like things that they're doing and the way they fetishize violence and scars.
Right.
And blood and all kinds of like disfigurement is because they're just like, it makes sense that they talk that way because they look at regular sex as this like boring clinical act,
right?
That doesn't really excite them, that doesn't really like give them anything. That's the whole point of the beginning, where they just like casually talk about, you know, well, James Spader and Deborah Unger are a married couple, and they casually talk about like fucking other people that day,
right?
And they said they basically like, oh, did you come? No. Did I come? No. Like, it's just,
yeah,
it's
they're
like,
and then
there's just like, this void that they can't fill.
Yeah.
Like, despite and they can't fill it with each other either.
And so while they're doing that, they're having sex in public, pretty much. I mean, they're on the balcony of their home, but you know, you see all the cars passing by, people passing by, everybody can see them, and even then, it's just like when you see. Any scene that depicts like sex in public, it's always like, oh my god, people are gonna see. It's like, it's all about that rush, and they don't even get that rush anymore. It's just like, it's very clinical and straightforward,
and the rushes they do get dissipate like the next time they try again, you know. It's like really interesting how it's a portrait of people that are always looking for that next fix. I mean, you can equate this with drug addiction, with anything else, you know. And I think it's kind of interesting, I'm thinking of it just now as we're talking, how if you compare this to something like Steve McQueen's Shame, you know, another NC-17 rated film that dealt with sex and an addictive element of that
also on. In a very unglamorous, unsexy way.
Great film, great film. But that one's much more moralistic, you know? Mm-hmm. It kind of comes down as like a morality play by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
What I love is Cronenberg has no interest in that, right? He's not judging these people. He just is curious about these people. And I think that's always been his skill as a filmmaker. And that's like, it's kind of why he was, I get what you're saying, where it's like an ultimate Cronenberg movie. It's like this, if he wouldn't have made this movie, it might have been a disaster. You know?
Absolutely.
Shouldn't have been made.
And just
you know?
A quick detour, the other reason I was going to say it's an ultimate Cronenberg movie, he's a big car enthusiast.
Like, oh, interesting.
He's absolutely loves,
that.
That's why he made that movie Fast Company before he did The Brood, which is like kind of an oft-forgotten movie. But he's a
it's
big
deep
car
cuts,
guy.
Cronenberg,
yeah,
man.
Deep cuts. So that's that's why I add it to this. He's got a fascination with cars, but is also fascination with sexuality. Mm-hmm. So combining the two together in that way. But yeah, absolutely. It's not a morality tale.
No.
But
it's almost like we mentioned his fascination with psychology, that he does put these characters under a microscope, and you do get this sense of curiosity. Like you said, I think curiosity is a great way to kind of come up with an explanation of why he picked this story and why he picked the... Because it's a very stripped down kind of story that, you know, doesn't really have much of a plot, doesn't really have much of a, you know, you don't get to, you know, the whole point is that you don't get to really have that much of a background on these characters, you don't get to really really know them all that well, apart from the singular moments that you see them in, and that's kind of the point. But yeah, his clinical approach is what makes it so much more interesting, because if there was any kind of a melodramatic or any kind of like an over-stylized approach to this, then it would have turned into like art house porn, basically.
Right.
Like, and it would have just turned into like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, look, you know, like this filmmaker, like one of those filmmakers that come out and say like, oh, my movie has a shitload of sex in it, but it's still art house. Like,
right. Or, I mean, the movie could be, in the wrong hands, would be just like shocking for the sake of shock.
Yeah,
I mean, there's stuff that happens in Crash where it's like, holy shit, like what am I watching right now? And I think we're probably all thinking of the same scene. It has to do with Rosanna Arquette.
Yeah.
That's probably, well, it's not the sole reason, but it's definitely the reason it got an NC-17. It's like he didn't cut it, and that takes balls. And that's great.
There's also Yeah, there is, I've never seen the R-rated cut. Yeah.
It doesn't. It of course doesn't have the mercenary cutscene.
I was about to say the other one, because the MPAA is like more harsh on homosexuality too. There's the scene with Elias Koteas and James Spader that might have even furthered that NC-17.
I want to talk about the cast of this movie as well, because you brought up, you know, Elias Koteas, James Spader's the lead playing James G. Ballard, you know.
Yeah, it's a J.G. Ballard book, so it makes sense.
And he's kind of a, like, he's a filmmaker that you get in the very brief glimpses in his career scenes in the movie where, like, he's sort of bored with what he's doing. Which, but he's got a level of respect, you know, but people are starting to turn on him. Mm-hmm. They, like, think he's this, like...
Could have been Cronenberg at this point. Very interesting, why he's right? So, like, because, like, what did he do before he did Naked Lunch and, I think, M. Butterfly before this?
Right, right.
So people were kind of... I think post-Dead Ringers weren't, like, fully on board with some of his movies.
Yeah, there's an ironic sort of, like, callousness to the way
Naked Lunch is great.
Yeah, right. Which I've actually never seen. It's, like, one of the three.
It's worth watching.
I need to check it out.
You won't know what the fuck's going on.
I've heard it's an unfilmable book.
Right.
Anyway.
But the cast is like a big element of what makes this work. Like, Holly Hunter is like, even though she's won an Oscar, still seems like an underrated actor, you know?
Oh, big
like
time.
And she's just so like, there's just like every choice she makes in this movie is very particular. Her haircut, the way the clothes fit her, you know. The way weird scenes happen, like the way she's introduced in this movie is so weird.
Yeah.
Right? It's so bizarre, yet it makes a kind of sense when you're watching it, even though you're just getting a glimpse of the world that you're about to learn more about. It's crazy. And I actually came away thinking Elias Koteas might be the, like, MVP of this movie.
Absolutely.
And he's like fucking Casey Jones in the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's why the first time I saw this movie, it was so like weird. I was like, this is my only basis of him.
Yeah. But he's so menacing, but not trying to be like, there's a million ways that performance could go wrong.
Absolutely.
He like walks that fine line, and it's always perfect.
He finds the balance between the menace and like an actual like empathy for the character.
He gets that guy.
He really gets it. And even like his character gets the way that like we are in society, even without like the aspect of like car crashes. Like, right, not his first scene, but like one of his first big scenes is you have all these crash enthusiasts,
right,
and they're reenacting the crash that killed
James Dean. Yeah.
And so like that's the way we are with any sort of celebrity death or whatever.
Yeah,
whatever.
Jane Mansfield is another one that becomes involved later on in the film. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Same idea. Yeah. It's the idea that like no matter what we felt about them beforehand, we have this obsession with what happened afterwards.
It's an interesting idea to weave into this movie, right? Because it doesn't necessarily need to be there to further whatever plot there is.
No, but it's
love
a nice
that
little like moment.
It's like a branch just growing out that it's like, ah, that's really interesting. He went there for a little bit, and it deepens the movie.
And it's almost like his desire to step in the shoes of these people, but not in the way that they became famous, not in like, I'm going to become an actor and be like James Dean.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm just going to envelop this thing that made this person a legend.
Right.
And he even says that, and he even, you know, that's his last line in the, when they do the reenactment, when the cops show up. And even after that, he kind of acknowledges that that was a cheesy thing to say. He's
almost
like
very,
he's self-aware of his, like, really passionate, like, intense reaction to these things.
Right.
And in a way, he kind of, like, in the middle of this group.
Yeah.
That kind of become like the fetishizes car crashes and sex. He's almost like, you know, imagine like a group of Trekkies.
Right.
And he's like out of them, it's like he's like the one that's like the uber nerd. Like,
right.
Like the one who's like the most like, who always dresses up in like,
he's the most hardcore fan.
Biggest nerd out of,
or he's Tyler Durden in Fight
Club. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, it's sort of like Project Mayhem, you know?
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, that's kind of, I kept thinking about David Fincher actually with both movies we're talking about, oddly enough, on this podcast, is like, see what David Fincher did so much better with Michael Douglas, like a few years later with The Game, as he did in Basic Instinct, right?
Or the same subject.
Yeah.
Like Gone Girl with that same like
idea
of gender roles, erotic thriller.
He also shoots San Francisco even better than Jan de Bont did in Basic Instinct.
That's
right,
that is Jan de Bont.
It's Jan de Bont, who went on to make
the
speed.
Yeah,
exactly. We should have talked about that, but that's all right.
Oh, well.
He'll come up, I'm sure, in some later podcast.
Yeah.
But is I kept thinking about David Fincher, you know, and then like you look at Crash and he used Deborah Unger in The Game to counterpoint with Michael Douglas. So I had all these things spinning around in my head, and I forgot exactly where I was going with that, but it just I thought about Fincher a lot as I was watching both movies and how I appreciated much more what Fincher can do with similar material to Verhoeven, like in comparison, like Gone Girl is a better version of a similar thing.
Yeah.
Like a paperback like bestseller that that you can actually make into a legitimately good film. But yet I love that as many similarities as I saw what Fincher does to like what Cronenberg does maybe in Crash. Cronenberg's thing is like still all it's all him, and it goes back to the way the characters talk, like we were describing or I described is like they're his characters coming out, you know, like they're all very self-aware.
Yeah, he's like grabbing someone else's shitty screenplay and like putting a stamp on it.
And I think that's where you get the clear vision of Crash, whereas Basic Instinct is like a halfway decent like gun for hire job for Verhoeven. Yeah. You know, he makes it sing when he can, but like Cronenberg, this is like his vision through and through, all the way to like not caring that it got an NC-17. You know,
Exactly. Like, he just wanted to make the film that he wanted.
He's like, whatever. I'm just gonna make my.
He's coming out this way. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Because he's never been really one to care about box office.
Though
watching the commentary on Videodrome, he's like, yeah, it'd be great if one day you're like, yeah, Videodrome number one movie in the box office. But he's like, it's not gonna happen. So.
Yeah, exactly, man. I mean, and you know, he always gives you those. I mean, just about every film has some memorable, be it a body horror moment. Usually it's some sort of body horror moment. And Crash is not lacking in any of those. And you can even compare it to something similar in Videodrome in terms of like a wound being a sort of sexual orifice, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And who else thinks of that shit? But like David Cronenberg, or, you know, I haven't read the Ballard book, but like maybe it's in there. But like, even if it is... It's like, that's, again, another argument for why it's such a perfect marriage.
Well, the Ballard book is apparently more, like, psychological in a way that it deals with. Like, it basically dealt with the kind of company that Ballard kept around the time.
Mm.
And it apparently has the same kind of approach, the way that a lot of Philip K. Dick's, like, more autobiographical weird books like Vallis does, where it's just, like, he's kind of, like, the observer, and he's, like... Like, he's, like, the... He's still eccentric and weird, but he's, like, the writer, and he's still... has, like, he can just, like, step back and look at this, you know, like, detach himself from this universe.
Okay.
And he just, like, looks at all these friends who are just, like, really out there. And this was kind of, like, Crash is pretty much, like, that kind of, like, J.G. Ballard looking into, like, these people who really were out there. Like, he kind of had that fetish, too, because...
Right.
Like, if you watch, you know, the Christian Bale character in Empire of the Sun...
Right.
...is based on J.G. Ballard, too. And in Empire of the Sun, the character is, like... fetishizes planes.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay.
J.G. Ballard was a guy who just like fetishized cars, planes,
automobiles.
You know, like
interesting.
So but the way that Crash the movie picks up that concept is almost like just picking up the basic elements of that story and dealing with it in non-judgmental, not like just it's almost like putting these people under a microscope, but not looking at them as if they're like lab rats or something.
Right,
but just like acknowledging
there's a difference.
They're human beings.
Right. In some ways, you could see how Cronenberg could be like. I find similarities between him and like Stanley Kubrick sometimes, but Kubrick was much more of what you're describing, right? And Cronenberg actually has more empathy for human beings than Kubrick does, but that's both again what makes them each great.
But also
in their
doesn't
own
shy
way.
Away from showing all these like. Straightforward, like all these eccentricities, without trying to like cover up for them, or just like trying to come up with convenient excuses as to like why these people
they
like
just
the way
are
they
this
do.
Way exactly. Yeah. And do we really need to know why, you know, they're into this?
No,
we see one basically. Character or
maybe
several
for
characters.
Some people they need to know the way, but
probably another reason this movie would struggle to find any audience beyond its rating and just accessibility. That's not really an issue now.
Yeah,
because
I told you guys the first time I watched this, right? Should I just like
I can't
say
remember
it really quick? Like, yeah, I was like, so the movies that come out in Turkey that have like adult subject matter like this, usually come out on. Cut. That's why I was so pissed after I watched Eyes Wide Shut and I got the DVD from America and it had those like
the
Austin
Kubrick
Powers like covers
in the
orgy scene. But yeah, Crash came to Turkey, it was uncut, and you had to be 16 and over to see it, and I had just turned 16, so it was like really exciting for me to go check it out.
Yep.
So I just went by myself and bought my ticket and they like looked at my ID and stuff. I was like, haha. And went in and the theater within the half hour before the movie started filling up with these like old women. Oh, like coming in pairs. And I think that's part of that was like the I think part of it was like the Basic Instinct effect.
Interesting.
It's like, you know, like the kind of suburban housewives who are just like,
this movie's scandalous.
Like, it's scandalous, you know, let's go see it. Right. And they I think they were expecting the same kind of like,
oh boy,
you know, a couple of sex scenes here and there, but like, you know, it's gonna be edgy.
Oh boy.
And my entire film watching experience, like, you know, I knew I loved the movie, but I feel like I was a little bit too young to fully appreciate it. And the couple of times that I watched it after college and stuff like that, like, and recently, the last time I watched it yesterday, I was just like, I was able to appreciate it that much more. But I was still enjoying it. Like, I was still, like, you know, really getting into it.
Right.
But the entire experience was kind of like this 5.1 surround of like shocked, you know, screams and like all these like old housewives and these women who just, I was the only man there under,
that's so weird.
I was the only person there under like 55.
Interesting.
And they were all just going like, oh my god, you know, it's just like, woohoo.
That would have been so fascinating to experience that, because I never got to see, never saw Crash in the theaters, you know.
No, I didn't either.
It would have been fascinating to just experience that and just hear those reactions.
But
and
I think that was flat out the Basic Instinct effect.
Yeah.
The way they marketed the movie.
Bad marketing, at least, basically.
It was the same kind of like, oh, it's an erotic thriller.
Right.
And, well, and honestly, Crash even getting made, I mean, maybe because it was Cronenberg, it could, but like, I feel like Basic Instinct's success maybe helped influence that movie.
Yeah, and if it led to something like Crash being a much more interesting take, you know, on a sort of psychosexual thing.
Yeah, I had to think about that. I was like, well, which came first, the chicken or the egg sort of thing? So I'm grateful if that's the case.
Basic Instinct
came along.
However, you look at, you know, continuing to directly compare the two movies, is like Basic Instinct has a lot of fat on it that can be kind of sliced off.
It's over
2 hours.
Yeah, it's a long
It's too long. And Crash doesn't have any fat on it. It's like, it's an efficient 1 hour 40 minutes or so.
100 minute movie. Yeah.
And it seems
exactly as long as it needs to
exactly.
be.
Yeah. And there's never, as like bizarre as the movie is, I think what ultimately makes it that can be palatable for people that may not watch weird movies all that often, and I think we can argue for it being super underrated, is like, there's an accessibility to the fact that he has respect, that he knows people are only going to watch bizarre material so much, right? Like, he never pushes it too far, even as weird as the movie gets. Keeps it at a respectable length. And the movie, although it has, you're kind of wondering, where is this all going? I think one of his gifts as a filmmaker is, like, you always can trust, like, there's a gift, you can trust that the guy who's at the helm of this film is not going to lead you down a path that's a waste of your time. Whereas Basic Instinct has, as much as I love Verhoeven, has a lot of alleyways it goes down where it's like, why are you fucking walking me down this blind alley and like
pretty much
my
last
ear
45
off,
minutes of Basic Instinct does become that kind of a waste of time.
Pretty disposable. Yeah. And you can't say that about Crash. Crash is like, needs every minute it has. It needs all the character development, one thing that leads
and even,
to
even
other.
If you look at it as some kind of a, like, because it does have like the structure of pornography, the way that it like deals with like sex. Like, the first 5 minutes of the film has three separate like graphic sex scenes in it.
Absolutely.
The first three scenes that you like are just like very direct and flat, like, these are people fucking.
Yeah.
You know, that's what this movie's gonna be about.
Right.
There's no like sugarcoating that fact at all. But the way that, you know, it's almost like the same way that in the realm of the senses is, the way
that
it actually, like, in the realm of the senses works a lot better as a singular piece of pornography and a singular piece of, like, you know, that does tell a very interesting story at the same time.
Right. Marrying, like, narrative filmmaking with
and
porn.
Straight up pornography.
Right.
Like, In the Realm of the Senses works really well as a one of the most, probably the most beautiful looking porno that you'll ever see.
Right.
Because it does also have, like, you know,
You see
actual penetration and stuff like that.
I know that about it, even though I haven't seen it.
And
right.
it's, and the thing with Crash is, like, it's kind of like the same thing. It's like, you could, from a distance, you can look at it as like, oh, it's just a string of sex scenes, but in a way that, like, those are the ones that, you know, it's using sex scenes to tell character, to tell a story,
to
really
Cronenberg,
put these
man.
People together. Like, the
you
first
know?
Time that that one long kind of tracking shot when James Spader and Holly Hunter have sex for the first time. Gives you everything you need to know about these characters from their sex scene. It's not the old, like, the bunch of, like, useless, unnecessary dialogue that, like, precedes it. It's the sex scene itself that, like, sets up that relationship.
The sex scenes are exposition, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, or character development, like you said.
Exactly.
And I think that's, another issue with Basic Instinct in comparison is like Basic Instinct is all about the like it's just sex to look
it's
at.
It's gratuitous.
Right? Yeah. Whereas Cronenberg never like those kind of sex scenes get boring and you kind of laugh at them after a while because there's it's a waste of time because it's like if I want to watch porn, I'll just go to the internet, right? So like it's a waste of time. Cronenberg, and this is where you can compare Crash to something like A History of Violence. It's like every sex scene develops the characters, pushes the narrative further. Like,
or
it's
even
there
the fly,
for a reason.
Even
Fly too. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, Videodrome, all these movies like deal with that. But like, I think of those scenes in History of Violence. Where like, man, there's like intense sex scenes, but it always is furthering the story and
or furthering the character.
Yeah,
especially the one on the stairs with Maria Bello and Viggo Mortensen. You're like, oh man, yeah.
And he doesn't shy away from showing graphic sex, but it's not gratuitous. That's the big difference.
It's
I'd
all
say between
all
him.
The sex and violence in his movies, and the perfect marriage between the two are for a single purpose in every single scene.
The point is not titillation. It's not just empty titillation, and the point is not even like regular titillation.
Right.
You know, it's just
examination.
It's I mean, he of course he casts like good-looking people.
Sure.
In the film,
but Holly Hunter, she's not like a traditional. She's not ugly, but you know what I mean. She's not like.
And Deborah Unger is not that kind of like perfect Sharon Stone look. I mean, she's a really beautiful.
She's
woman.
A more realistic. She's
realistic
more
like
the Sharon like Stone type
gorgeous
you see.
Woman.
Yeah, walking
on
around
the
downtown Portland or something. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And the way that he pairs these. He puts these actors together. Like, it's an interesting story that I learned that apparently, like, there was a subplot involving James Spader and an affair that he has with a secretary that he decided to take out because the chemistry between the two actors was too good.
Oh, interesting. So there you go.
So
that tells you a lot about what he's going
for. That's the exact
right.
opposite of what every single one of these like people casting for a romance or a thrill or like erotic film, they would always be looking for, like, do they have chemistry? Like, do they have passion?
Right.
Do they meld well together?
And
this is one of those cases where he went exactly the opposite, where he's just like, this sex scene works too well. Like, apparently, like, James Spader and, like, the woman, like, got added in a way that just like made it a little bit maybe too passionate.
Interesting.
Or too...
I didn't know that.
Interesting.
And the way that you look at like, and that makes sense because everybody else, it's almost like cast specifically because they don't have any chemistry with each other.
Yeah,
that's
right.
kind of the point. And
it's like
anti-chemistry. Perfectly well with that, especially with Deborah Unger and James Spader.
Exactly.
They have zero chemistry.
That's
the relationship. Kind of the point because they want that. They want to get to that rush.
Their relationship is like an experiment. Like, what can they learn about each other and how they can get off through each other? Because they both get each other. That's like what seems like the only foundation they have as a relationship.
Or what their experience with other partners can bring to the table.
To the
table.
Relationship. And there's not many movies about that. You know what I mean? There's not many stories that actually deal with that. And it's probably an element that's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable. There's a lot of things that will make people uncomfortable with Crash. But, it's... Cronenberg always makes it palatable. Like, you know, like The Fly, Videodrome, all these movies we're talking about, like A History of Violence, Eastern Promises, like they're palatable and they have like sort of winks and like hints at getting like more mainstream, but he'll never go that way.
No.
Like, I don't know. It's just why he doesn't, I don't love every movie he puts out still, but he's one of the best.
Still,
you gotta
still go
see
every
he's
movie.
Must see
comes out.
Yeah.
Like, I think like his earlier, I think Shivers is really good, but like the couple of movies that he made after that, like, I think Rabbit is a pretty shitty movie.
I think The Brood's not a very good
The
movie.
The Brood's not very good.
I kind of
like
The Brood.
Still,
the Brood
like,
has that one, like, you know, in the third act,
moment,
when
big
he,
moment,
the big memorable scene
the
that you're talking about. Yeah,
around.
The weird embryotic sac that's external.
And people remember that more.
Yeah,
but it's really
than the melodrama that came before it.
But it's still, like, it's still, they even the most... like boring kind of tedious movies that he makes has something fascinating about them.
Yeah.
Has something memorable. Like even Rabbit, which is like his least memorable film to me, one of his least memorable, has that like weird like the woman who's like infected has like a weird like spike
under the arm.
Coming out of the armpit. Like it's just, you know. So there's always something that's just like feels weird and fascinating yet like weirdly human at the same time
and never out of place, like you're always like that works, you know, that that makes sense in this world that's being shown to me, you know, but that's
he
not
never has like
off.
Contempt like an utter contempt against his characters, which is again sometimes works to the detriment for Paul Verhoeven is sometimes he just seems to have so much contempt
like, where you wonder like you're straining to wonder like why did he want to make this
absolutely.
Like why make Hollow Man if you clearly like have no interest in
these characters or their plight or anything about that.
Yeah. Cronenberg is like a fascinating filmmaker. And I mean, even his last movie, Cosmopolis, I did not like that movie, but like, it demands your attention. You gotta chew on it. You gotta think about it. You have to see it. And yeah, I mean, that's there in Crash for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why I picked it.
It's a good choice, man. I'm really glad I got to see this movie again. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes it's just hard to make time to revisit movies you know you should.
Yeah, so, that was good.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's interesting because I've seen Crash less than Basic Instinct because it was
Me too.
When I was growing up, it was on cable all the time, and I would get to like just I even like taped it off cable.
It was always on. Yeah, you could find Basic Instinct anywhere.
It was everywhere. But I feel like Crash to me, like watching Crash now, Basic Instinct, it was about 80% of the stuff that I just like already forgotten.
Yeah.
But Crash, I could tell. Yeah. Every scene that would come up before they did, like right. I
remember,
knew
you remember
that movie backwards and forwards because everything that happens in it is so memorable and it has like stamped my like, especially like when I was 16 when it came out,
it's
and then
going in your brain, yeah,
yeah, going to like film school where just like you start getting into like art house films, and
yeah,
Crash was my way into talking about like, hey, you know, I've seen the uncut version of Crash, and you know, it definitely like it has that memory in me that is interesting because it's a film that, you know, counting yesterday, like I've probably seen only like 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. It's not really like
It's a shame that it's so hard to find, too.
I know,
like it's really difficult.
It makes me wonder if Criterion is maybe looking to get Crash because they put out a number of Cronenberg titles.
Well, the only way to get it now, because the original DVD is out of print,
right?
The Warner Archive has it.
Okay, so probably Criterion.
Meanwhile, we can watch Basic Instinct on Netflix.
Yeah, I know. That's how we all watch it.
Exactly. So. Yeah, I'd just say good picks, and you know, not one. I think most people would think Crash. Well, you got to do Crash and Crash. You know, combine the two Crashes.
But there's no reason to do that.
It's too easy. It's too easy. So, yeah.
I don't think I'm going to watch 50 Shades of Grey. I don't even know that much about the book, but I could say with certainty that you should probably watch Crash before
just
even
Crash.
Just
yeah.
Crash before watching.
You want to see real stupid fucking like crazy that. Fetishes, man? Yeah, exactly. I feel like 50 Shades of Grey will be a sort of regression into like. Like, that's supposed to be risque?
I
like
bet you 50 happening? Shades of Grey is going to be, like, Basic Instinct.
Yeah, it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge hit in that same way.
You're going to have this, like, unrolling of, like, again, like, all these, like, erotic thrillers that's right. going to... People who never watch, you know, anything that's, like, really risque, like... Considered to be risque,
which is why that book was so popular. Yeah,
exactly. And people like us are gonna be like, "Oh my god, this is so lame!"
Right? And it would be a shame if it ends up being like.
I hope not. I hope it's
like if it's analogous to something like Basic Instinct, it's like, well, so we haven't come at all. We haven't come farther at all in Hollywood movies like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, exactly.
But thankfully, there's people like David Cronenberg that are just like, you know, doing what they need to do to make a tinier movie like Crash, but on a scale with talented actors that like they can deal with the subject matter mm-hmm. like this for real, and that's I'm glad we have Crash, you know, I'm glad too. It's out there.
Me yeah. too.
All right,
you guys want to cut it off here?
Yeah, I think we should.
All right, yeah, thank you for listening, and check us out again next time. We're going to be picking another underrated and overrated.
Is it your choice?
It's my turn.
It's your choice. Okay,
so we'll talk about that, but yeah, signing off is Octavia Kozak, film critic for DVD Talk, The Playlist, Oregon Herald, and Bay Asperger.
Octay is on the internet, as we need to remind everybody. Just Google him. You'll find him out there.
Exactly. That's what he's doing.
I'm Eric McClanahan, signing off. Writer for The Playlist, podcast called The Gesture Tracking, and I'm film editor for Oregon Arts Watch.
And signing off is Ryan Oliver, host of the Gotcha Movies podcast and associate editor at gotchamovies.com.
All right. Thank you.